Yep. Give me a nod when you're ready. Junior's ready. Stand by.
Hey everyone, welcome to Bullets and Bourbon. I'm here with my co-host and I'm here with my very good friend Chris Scott. So this is the 100th episode, so I guess it's kind of a special big deal, I guess. But you know, Chris was the very first guest on the podcast. He was here whenever it was in its inception, whenever we were both still on the team. And we were recording in the office, hoping that nobody would walk in and make a lot of noise, which happened quite often. He was there for whenever me and some of the guys were talking about how drunk I got at Memorial. And he was like, hey, you probably shouldn't be talking about that kind of stuff on the podcast. But no harm, no foul. It was all fun. And me and Frank have been having a really fun time since then, but you know, we're really happy to have you here, Chris.
Yeah. Thanks for having me back on. I enjoy listening to it and it's like kind of my way to keep up with you guys. So it's fun to be back on an episode. I don't know, just get to talk about myself for an hour or something.
I mean, you are very narcissistic. But no, thank you. So we're both out of the service now. That's, I guess, one of the biggest changes for the both of us. You kind of got out shortly before I did. But you still do the reserve thing on occasion. But you went to Arizona, and now you're in New Hampshire. So fill us in on what you've kind of been up to since you got out.
Yeah, so I might have covered this a little bit in the last one I was on, but yeah, got out, wife and I traveled for a bit, then I got her pregnant, and so we stopped traveling for a bit, and we had our daughter in Arizona a couple months ago, and then figured, wow, she's pretty pregnant. This is before the daughter came along, like she'd probably start working again. Be a good idea. So it's kind of out of the blue, but I heard about a job that had opened at SIG, and I know a couple guys that used to work there. I mean, people listen to podcasts know them too. Scott Rader and Sam Loreno. And if we could combine them both in one person, that'd be amazing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so thankfully applied to the job and was fortunate enough to get it. So we had the baby out in Arizona, did a little back and forth, a little teleworking, and then moved out to New Hampshire, and now the wife and daughter are out here too, and we're just going through the whole transition phase. But yeah, working at SIG and getting to hang out with some of the guys I used to work with, getting to work with them again. Pretty sweet.
Since then you've competed in some of the you've competed in NCR and championships. And you still maintain close relations with certain guys on the team, right?
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, it's definitely not as close as it used to be when I was on it, or working in weapons training battalion there. But yeah, still keep in contact. Alex Gokin gives me a call every once in a while, fills me in on the latest happenings. And then also just keeping track of them on social media, which is super exciting how good they're doing. As much as I'd love to be like the cranky old, I don't even call myself a vet yet, because I'm still in the reserves, but like
being Johnny Lee Davis Sr.
Yeah. That guy. Yeah. But yeah, cranky old guys on social media saying it was better when I was on the team. They're getting pretty stinking good. So I don't think that's true. I think it's kind of turned into they're better than when I was on the team, which is exciting to see. Like, I think, what was it? Like, Area One, was that the one out in Wyoming or Montana?
Montana.
Montana. Yeah, I was like, holy crap, they did really good. I was like,
Yeah.
okay, that's awesome. And then, like, the next match, they did really good. And the next match, they did really good. I think, what, Area 8 was the most recent?
Yeah. So I told them in the beginning. So when they started the summer season, they had to work a lot of matches. And I told like Summer Shooter and just some of them, I'm like, it's different when you work the match because it's basically like a local, you're dummy testing a lot of these stages and like do your best, but understand that some of your better performances are probably going to come when you guys actually go as competitors to Area 4, Area 1, Area 8. And ended up being the case. Sam Nelson bumped to M in open. Jim Steele just bumped to M in open at Area 8. I think him and Peyton came in second and third overall, right behind a GM. And so, yeah, they're all doing John Dolly bumped to M at Area 1. So it's just a question of when then they're going to take the next step and one of them is going to become a GM. Actually, I was thinking about this, Matt. I think we should like commission like a wrestling belt for the first one that makes it to GM because they're all really close. Like it's between Nelson Dol or Nelson Steele Garcia, Treat. Like any of them is on the verge of making that jump. But yeah, they're doing really well, Chris.
And they're already shooting at GM levels. Like
They
it's a
are.
little bit of that. Oh, there's an M that's like second place with a whole bunch of G's behind them. It's like,
Yeah.
okay, like devoted time to getting really good at classifiers or insert whatever excuse.
Yeah. I personally that I think it should be a mix. I think match bump is the way to go, but with how hard it is to do that to GM, having like match classifiers and actual classifiers is that's how I ended up making them is a mixture of both.
Yeah. And I mean, also, like, who really cares? Granted, I care. I really want to make G. But it's like match performance is the thing that matters. So like
It is.
you get first or second place, like you could be B class and Raider won an area match at B class. Like
Right.
that was Area 8,
Yeah.
what, 2 or 3 years
And
ago?
people got so pissed at him because he was a B class.
Oh,
But
they were
like
like, you sandbagger.
if you
No,
don't
B class.
if you don't give a shit, like here's the thing. Here's my issue is that everyone is quick to condemn the person that overperforms their classification, but no one's slinging shit at that piece of shit GM that's shooting below 90% and invalidating the entire major match for everyone else.
I am.
That's who I.
I'm looking at them and be like,
Yeah.
you are a paper GM. You
Yeah.
suck.
Like that's who I got beef with because I would have match bumped to him if it weren't for one of those guys. That's just me. Have you still been competing, Chris?
A little bit. So when we were on traveling around, I shot like worked out pretty good. I was going through Minnesota and they're running their section match. So I was able to shoot that. And
Did you
then,
win your division there?
yeah.
So you still got it.
yeah, I mean it was I don't think there were any GMs and I shot limited. I forgot my production mags, so some people could say I was hiding. I think that production guy would have beat me anyway, so yeah, so was able to shoot a couple USPSA matches. Been pretty sporadic, to be honest. And then shot the Marine Corps matches like Matt was saying, which was really a pretty neat way to do my reserve time for the year. Shooting East and championship. Frankie and I got to shoot together during that, so that was fun.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and then the past month, like in August, I shot a local match here, but we were busy like running matches. And then September, I'm telling myself that's when I'm going to start shooting the matches we're running, depending on kind of what that looks like. Obviously, running the match comes first, and then competing in it comes second.
When are you going to come to a three-gun match? Jeez.
I know. It's crazy. I wish I would have had a kid in the Marine Corps when I was in a position of leadership, because I feel pretty bad about what single Chris did, as far as like making people work all the time. So it's really opened my eyes to how busy it is with like a family, and believing a little bit more in people. Before I was like, stop using that excuse. You just don't want to shoot, like, or you can make time.
Hey, I made time. I put my family on the back burner.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was necessarily the right thing to do, but I did.
Yeah, I'm really trying not to let them hold me back from my, performance at local three-gun matches. but yeah, once things settle down a little bit with all this move and everything, I would love to be able to shoot another three-gun match.
I think November would be a good time for you. I think that's a perfect time. The Zoo City Fall Brawl's happening. I think we can get you out there on my squad with the shooting team and double star team. I think it would work out really good.
I give it a nice soft no by saying, we'll see what happens.
I don't like that answer. I will. Okay. You know how annoying I can get whenever I really want something to happen?
Yes.
That's what I'm going to do to you.
Well, there's a few more things to consider now. So, we'll see. We'll see what the travel plans look like.
Pay attention to your family. They are infinitely more important than going to a match.
Yeah, but there's time for friends too.
Yeah, there is.
So, do you see yourself competing a lot in that, I guess, your local area, Area 7, is it? Like doing travel outside the state, maybe when you get your feet underneath you?
Yeah, so I do, and I think it's important because I guess I could talk about like my job a little bit. I think this would help create a little context on it. but I guess the title is competition program specialist, but work with events at the SIG Academy. And we essentially run shooting competitions for the Academy. So really trying to implement a good program there, get people coming to the Academy to compete, give it a good name, et cetera, et cetera. We kind of talked about this, probably going into like more detail and some like the future and what that looks like, in another episode. But yeah, so that's kind of my day to day is, kind of a full-time match director now, which is, a complete dream job. It's pretty cool that some of my experiences in the military were actually able to transition over to the civilian side. Which I did not expect. So with that, I think it's still important for me to be able to compete at a decent level, both for like being able to design and then oversee the design of good stages and good matches, because I think high level competitors are some of the best ones to be able to determine that, and then also kind of let people in the area see that, like, oh, okay, well, if there's some good competitors coming out here and like we trust them that they know what good is, we're a little more confident that we go to their match and it'd be a good quality product. With that being said, I think it's important and I'm definitely going to make it a focus to continue to shoot in the local area. We just shot and worked a local match to kind of give back a little bit, me and my coworker Derek Huzingera. So he's the him and I are running the matches together. So we went and shot a local match, and like then people could see like, oh, these guys actually know what they're talking about. They're not just like two random dudes, especially me, I'm not from the area, so not just some random dude I've never heard of before who's all of a sudden coming in here and running matches. So it helped create a lot of buy-in and create a little bit of conversation about what we're doing over at SIG.
Okay, I have a question, because I remember you and I had this discussion, which you probably don't remember because it was one of those weird off-put conversations like a year or two ago. Okay. You were talking about when you were gonna and traveling the country, that you were gonna just show up to some random local match wearing like some white Nike shoes with like some really short shorts and like knee high socks, just looking like a dork, like, and somebody that couldn't shoot. When are you gonna do that?
So it was Reeboks. It was gonna be the white Reeboks with like the Velcro. It's gonna be jean shorts, but they weren't gonna be short. And then I wanna get like one of like the Smith and Wesson like SDV9 or whatever. It's like their new version of the Sigma. I guess now I could get like a base model 320, but that's still like a decent gun. So I think the Sigma would be better. But yeah, I don't know when I'm gonna do that. I think that'd be fun. The thing is, not shooting that great, so it wouldn't, like, people wouldn't really get the joke of it. Like, oh yeah, well, this guy actually doesn't know what he's doing. it's supposed to be funny.
I mean, how are you performing now? I mean, I know you said you haven't really been focusing much on shooting, but have your skills atrophied that much?
A decent amount. I mean, I shot like half the stages for the match we ran last weekend. They're pretty poor. I think both of you guys can attest to, like, and I hate using the excuse, and I want to find a way around the excuse, but it's really difficult to perform at a high level for a match you're running.
Yes.
Yeah. But that's, to me, that's also like, oh, that's such an excuse. And so I, like, Shannon Smith, he's directed a ton of matches, has performed at a high level at them. He'd probably perform at an even better level if he wasn't running it, but he still does perform well. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like the model that I kind of want to emulate there, is like still performing at a high level even though you're running the match. But yeah, that one shot pretty poor. The local match we ran, or that we helped work, shot decent. Kind of getting back in the groove of things. So I'd say if I had to make up a percentage, which is probably not even accurate, maybe like 80% of at my peak, whenever that was.
It seems to come back fairly quickly for you, because, you know, you had the benefit of a time where you were pretty invested in your competitive career and you were doing extremely well. I remember when you came out to Fredericksburg before championships, and the first few stages, I'm like, that doesn't look like Chris. Like, you're throwing mics, something was off. But then you dialed it in and was like, okay, that's the guy I remember. That's the guy that is going to terrify everybody at championships. Hurt some feelings. So, yeah, I think it's just not the point of emphasis. And, you know, going back to what you're saying about being a match director and not performing well, I think you'll get there once you guys have some level of stability and continuity, and you can shift a little more mental power to your own performance. But you guys are starting something new, so I imagine it's going to take some time, yeah?
Oh, yeah. And thankfully, we came in on a program. Like, there were things going on when I came in, and there was definitely like foundation set, and there's a really good team of guys there. So there are some new things we're doing or new things we're implementing, which is taking a lot of focus, but it's not like, I came in there and like totally came up with everything. but yeah, once it gets a little more established, and I just figure out, like, I mean, it's like when you get to a new unit, takes you a little bit to like, who do I even talk to if I need this? Mm-hmm. Still like learning names. I think that'll help out once there's a little more stability.
Yeah. So you're still, what I took from that is you're still learning a little bit of the SIG infrastructure, like the corporate architecture there. How much is like the greater, I guess, New England, like USPSA Area 7, the section, that kind of stuff? Have you tapped into that stuff yet, or are you still working your way towards that?
Still working my way towards that. Thankfully, the guy I work with, Derek, he is from the local area, and he actually worked at another range before running a match for them, and then has shot some of the local matches. So he's kind of tapped in a little bit there, which has been really helpful to me. And then also Scott Rader's been up here just hurting.
That helps.
Yeah. Yeah, it helps a lot. And then like my one of my levels of bosses is Phil Strader. So
that also helps.
Yeah, he probably knows a thing or two about action. Yeah. So
just a little.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, and there's some other guys who were or are still competitive shooters in the academy. So there's definitely a knowledge base to tap into. As far as me, I've shot like, I think just two local matches here. I was teleworking in Arizona for a decent chunk of time. And then I took some few weeks off after the baby came. So yeah, not as tapped in, but I have a good team around me that I can kind of bounce.
Yeah. It takes time. What I've learned since I took over Quantico from Tim Hitchcock is that all the other match directors in the area were, you know, very quick to introduce themselves. And now I'm getting messages saying like, hey, come up to Annapolis, come shoot our match, which I will, because I'm moving to Annapolis next year. I want to know what that local's like. But in other ways too, because, you know, I shot at Sir Walter this last weekend and I ran into a random dude who was starting up a USPSA match in the Camp Lejeune area.
Really?
So you're probably going to see more posts from us because I plan on supporting, like, getting the word out on that, because that area has been so starved for a quality match. Case in point, it was a bunch of Lejeune Marines that driven all the way out to Raleigh, like 3 hours, just to shoot a good match.
But I have to ask Frank real quick, did they hear of our podcast?
We talked more about match directing than I was wearing the jersey. It didn't really come up, but no, we were mostly talking because like this guy had kind of gone all in and he bought all the walls and the barrels and all the fault lines. And I was just like, let's get you some help. I want to make sure that your match gets filled up. But yeah, once you like, because only so many people have that experience, and then you kind of just want to help other people out, cause it helps the community to have 3 to 4 quality matches within driving distance. Cause if you're a degenerate, you can just spend every weekend shooting. But having the, you know, a quality match every single weekend is just such a boon as well.
Yeah. There's the demand for it. It's crazy. At least up here, the like insatiable demand for USPSA that I've seen so far, at least. Like we run indoor matches too, which you can't get as many people in there, mm-hmm. but like they sell out within a day each time. Our outdoor match sold out, and it's like just getting off the ground, and it feels like you just to run USPSA matches constantly and then keep selling out.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have. Unfortunately, like you want to get everyone in. It's the same way around here. There's certain matches, like as soon as it opens on practice score, I was like 30 minutes late to sign up for Thermont, and the waitlist was already 30 people long. So, but that's what alarms are for.
You know, we're talking a lot about USPSA, but have you found any 3 guns up there? I know there is 3 gun up there in New Hampshire. I know a couple of the guys that run it.
Yeah, looking on practice score, and we ran a PCSL 2 gun match last month. So I ran into some of the 3 gun crowd from that. There are some local ones. Looking on practice score, it didn't seem like they're like, doesn't seem like it's huge right now. I think it used to be bigger. Just, I mean, like 3 gun a lot of other places.
Do you see 3 gun like dying in a sense and 2 gun kind of coming to the forefront, or do you think it's just going to kind of balance itself out?
I think 2 gun's going to be bigger. I mean, just looking at there's different factors that play into it, but we ran our first 2 gun match and it sold out pretty quick. And then we're sold out for our next one, and that sold out pretty quick. So like and then looking at the size of the 3 gun matches, like the results on practice score, it doesn't even compare. Now that's like they're running at different places. So I don't know what kind of factor that builds into it. But yeah, unfortunately, I love 3 gun. I mean, that's still where my passion lies. But I don't see it ever being bigger than 2 gun, especially when it really takes off here with PCSL and hit factor scoring.
Yes.
There are a couple major 2 gun matches, and I know they are PCSL based. but there really hasn't been any other major two-gun matches. Like, it's still really at the local level. Do you see the two-gun taking over major matches and transitioning from three-gun to two-gun at some point?
I see that. Like, it is kind of interesting because, like you said, it's at that local level. The three-gun majors that have been around for a long time are, like, still going. It seems, like, pretty strong. I know, like, Rocky Mountain just made a comeback. I didn't look at their results to see how many people. I think they're actually on practice score now, too. Imagine that.
They are. Well, Denise is no longer running it. It's somebody else. So, like, they handed over the reins to somebody else, and so it's more modernized, I guess you can say.
Okay. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of momentum going for some of those bigger three-gun matches. Okay, looking at Rocky Mountain, they had 171 people.
Which, that's huge.
Yeah, and there's, like, I think they didn't delete a lot of the people that didn't show up. So there's probably 20 or 15. So 160, 150.
That's still considered for three-gun nowadays. It's still considered a relatively large match. Not like it used to be whenever you'd sign up for a match and there'd be 250, 300 people.
Yeah.
But you haven't really seen those numbers in quite a while. I would say a lot of your legacy matches still get a lot of large participation. Your Rocky Mountains, your Superstition Mountain, your Texas Three-Gun Championship, Memorial, you know, matches that have been around. You know, Memorial's only, this is going to be their sixth year, but that's, you know, I think their popularity grew for other reasons. But your legacy matches that have been around 20, 30 years, those are just staple matches that people go through year in and year out.
Yeah, and I think they'll just keep sticking around. But it does seem like, and I could be off on this, I'm not as clued into the whole scene right now, but it does seem like you see a lot of the same names shooting those major three-gun matches, like you do at some USPSA matches too.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't seem like there's as big of a base. Like, if it was like a pyramid, it's like a pretty, like, the base of that pyramid isn't that big. Where, like, USPSA, the base is huge, and then you do see a lot of the familiar faces at the major matches, but a lot of different ones at, like, area matches. And I think two-gun right now, or PCSL two-gun, because it's a lot different than what two-gun used to be, is building a really wide base. Like, I think once they start getting some of their more major matches off the ground, it's going to, I don't know, have such a good foundation to build into something bigger. I mean, I hope I'm wrong. I would love for three-gun to explode again.
I think there will be areas where three-gun stays heavily alive, like North Carolina. I don't think you're getting rid of three-gun there. Like, you know, the Zoo City matches. I think Minnesota up at Forest Lake, I think they'll keep on running. You know, Superstition, I see them continuing. Texas, I think it'll be pockets around the country where it stays alive. But yeah, I do see two-gun kind of taking over as well, like what you said.
Mm-hmm.
I think as soon as people realize that they could shoot their rifle in a hit factor match, they're like, I'm sold.
Yeah.
Sir Walter runs a match like that, that sells out instantly. I remember seeing Tim Hitchcock at that, and yeah, people like hit factor.
Well, the polls from the USPSA crowd where I three on USPSA crowd can be pretty similar in a lot of ways, but it does seem like USPSA guys are pretty drawn towards shooting two gun. Sometimes there's not as many people who'd make the jump from USPSA to three gun.
No.
Because
you need to triple your logistical footprint, and among other things. We're half and half at Quantico, half USPSA, half PCSL. And I have not had anyone come up to me and say, like, I want to go back to full USPSA. But I have had people come up to me and say, like, if you did PCSL year round, I'm all for it.
And so. Here's another indicator with Three Gun. And I guess you can say Three Gun has never been that big around the Quantico area. I know whenever I ran some of the Three Gun matches, some of the matches I ran, we had about 60 to 70 people show up, which for our area, that's pretty good. Now, what, Frank, they opened Two Gun to in 70. The Three Gun match?
Yeah, so we had a cap of 70 for Two Gun. And so, yeah, with the wait list,
Sunday sold out, but then the Saturday match, which is a Three Gun match, they, you know, it didn't sell out, and it's more or less the same match for Three Gun that Two Gun is doing, but, you know,
yeah,
they opened Two Gun up for that Saturday as well.
Yeah, so the Two Gunners shooting on Saturday with Three Gunners are going to have time plus scoring, because we're not going to coexist hit factor and time plus. That's way too much work. But here's the thing too, like the way that the stages are designed, even the Three Gun shotgun is not a very heavy presence. You can certainly go heavy on shotgun because Alex does a great job on giving people options, and if they want to take a lot of steel targets with shotgun, they can. But you can, I mean, when we started it off, it was like, you're going to take like four or five shots with your shotgun and then you're just going to dump it, and people still haven't gravitated to it. So, yeah, but I agree with Chris. I think, you know, Two Gun is a lot more accessible now that there's hit factor. People like the targets.
The barrier to entry is a lot lower.
Yeah. And I mean, you have people that are like diehard shotgunners. I know Green Ops runs a shotgun class. There's a few others, but it's rifle and pistol are still ruling the roost. So, but, you know, with this being 100th episode, a bit of a commemoration, you guys, I have not been around since the beginning. I did listen to the first few episodes because it gave me insight into what was going on with the team. But Chris, you were the first interview, and Matt, obviously you started it. So like, we just talk a little bit about how things have changed since that first episode. For me, I mean, obviously, Matt, once you brought me on, we haven't taken a break. Every week we've come out with something. We've interviewed all kinds of personalities. You know, we had JJ Rakaza on twice. We had Mike Pannone on quite a few times.
Four times.
Yeah. The social media presence has definitely gotten pretty big. I think we're sitting close to 1600 followers on Instagram right now. The view count or the listen count has continued to go up. We've managed to interview most of the personalities on the Marine Corps shooting team. So I think a lot of things have progressed, but I'm interested to hear from, I guess, more of a listener perspective, Chris, some of the things that have changed for you as a listener.
I'll say, and I want to say this in a way that's not derogatory towards Matt. Since it's not meant to be that way at all. But Frank, when you came on, like, I know it's like an immediate, like your guys' process and like the professionalism of it. And I think that was because Matt wasn't trying to do it all on his own. And there was a lot more bandwidth to spread it over both of you. Like improved a lot. Like you guys both being able to work on interview questions, managing the social media across two people, like just spreading that workload, and really tapping into kind of the different worlds that both of you are in, like bringing a little more of that heavy USPSA perspective, to the podcast. And then like Matt knowing, 98% of the Marine Corps past and present, it really created a cool, like combination of, in the beginning, it was mainly just the shooting team. It was to promote like what we were doing and give people that insight on like what's going on the teams. And it really morphed into you guys changed the name for a reason, past just the shooting aspect. Goes into like the interviews you did, like for the book,
Bastards and Brothers.
So like that was there might have been things that happened before that I don't remember, but it seemed like a cool turning point or is like really expanding beyond the shooting sports and reaching a broader audience, but then also getting to pull people from those areas where maybe they weren't familiar with and exposing them to the other side of the podcast. So I think you're kind of just building the community as a whole, which has been really cool to listen to. And I know as like a listener and somebody who whose relevance in the Marine Corps is only going to get less and less each day, it's fun to be able to have somebody who's retired and somebody who's still active duty, and then somebody who's on the officer side and somebody who was on the enlisted side, to give those different perspectives and like kind of help me stay up to date, like what's going on in Marine Corps marksmanship. So it's been a good ride. I enjoy listening to it, and I enjoy that you guys are both doing it together now.
So I have to ask this, because this is something that is a new change for the team. And I want to kind of get your thoughts and opinion on this. With the rifle team no longer being the traditional rifle team that it is, and they've transitioned over to a PRS gas gun team, what do you think that's going to do for the longevity and for the competitiveness of the team?
I mean, probably not surprised. I'm glad to see it go in that direction. And it's like easy for somebody to say, maybe like actions didn't show that, but like I never like hated the sport. Like I enjoyed when we had championships where we shot bullseye rifle in here, and I actually enjoyed shooting it.
I didn't.
Yeah, so like I enjoyed it. It's a different kind of fun. I enjoyed shooting bullseye pistol. I did that some with like the San Diego shooting team before I came to the big team. Also a different kind of fun. The issue I had was that like we had limited, and we'll continue to have, and this is every organization, like you're limited on time, like money and manpower gets kind of factors into time there. So you have to be really strategic on like where you spend those resources. And I thought it was like I think it's the best idea to like spend them on things that are like have the most impact on training, that we currently know. So like, it seems like currently the shooting sports that have like the closest correlation to how the Marine Corps has decided to train have been the action shooting sports. That could completely change in 20 years. And we all need to make sure that, I mean, I won't be the one making any of those decisions, but like make sure that who's ever in those positions are willing to change at that point too, because we could even look at like three gun. I think a heavy emphasis on like why we shot three guns so much was because it's like the best way to shoot action rifle. And I still think there's a ton of value with three gun, but we just need to make sure we never like fall in love with the actual sports and we fall in love with like what the sports do for training Marines.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We fell in love with bullseye rifle for a long time past when there was something better out there for training Marines. And that's what I didn't like about it, because it took so many resources. If it could coexist at the same time without soaking up those resources from the team, then great, keep doing it. There would be no reason to get rid of it.
Over 40 years pass. And I guess that's my biggest problem too. I never had a problem with them as a sport,
mm-hmm.
because it's a sport. I don't care what sport anybody is in. My problem has always been we have to look past it as a sport and look at it as something where we can train Marines in order to increase their abilities. And nobody wanted to look at it in that sense, except us action guys, and everybody called us the bad guys,
mm-hmm.
which I don't give a shit that we were considered the bad guys. But I mean, it's true. Like, why people say, oh, well, this is the purest form of teaching people the fundamentals. No, it's not. Fundamentals are fundamentals. You apply them the same way as you do in action that you do in bullseye. You just take more time in bullseye. They're the same fundamentals.
Yeah, and the past, like, us or them on the team now, like bigger Marine Corps has decided to train Marines in a different way. So like the team can lead on some things, but they also need to follow on other things. And so like if, and they work together a lot. So like MPMS and teams, very close relationship. But like there was the decision made to train Marines in a different way that did not look like Bullseye. And I do think that like, since they're still teaching table one to entry level recruits and officers, like they, if you want to maintain some Bullseye teams, that's probably a pretty good place to do it. It seems like there might be more I'm not thinking of there, but like at the MCRDs, maybe that'd be a good place. But like we've decided to train Marines in a different way. So the team needs to kind of like, which they are, they're doing a great job, help support that.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Matt, you started this, you know, you signed up for that Podbean subscription and you just started interviewing, you know, started with Chris, you interviewed Nick Capco, guys on the team. But as the person who started all this, like, what are some of your, you know, reflections after having hit this many episodes and we've been going continuously for a little over 2 years at this point?
It's just kind of been never ending. It's kind of hard to sit back and reflect on everything that has been accomplished and everything that has been said. A lot of those early episodes, all the episodes have been really fun to do. The older episodes were a lot different because it was just really nonchalant in a sense. In a way that's really fun, because I remember like the first time I had you on, Frank, we were sitting in 2nd Recon Battalion in the barracks.
And Alex Gokey was on the second bunk. Yes. And occasionally you'd hear a hell yeah. Like just he was also drinking like hard seltzers too.
Yes, he was drinking Trulies. and so those times were fun, but you know, I think in order to stay alive, if you want your numbers to grow, if you really truly want to get the message out there, you know, you kind of have to look past the shenanigans, and I'm not saying we're not having fun, but we've just professionalized this in a way to where, you know, I think leaders in the Marine Corps can get behind some of the things that we're saying. I think the listeners can take us seriously because we do have a lot of information to actually give. And I think we can actually build a community that does want to participate and does want to let us know how things are running. So it's been a really fun ride. Like, you know, you and I are always bouncing ideas off of each other. We're talking 2-3 times a week. It's allowed us to grow our relationship and our friendship to another level. And, you know, we know how to read off of each other. And, you know, you are a mastermind behind a lot of the questions. You know, very seldom now do I really have to sit down and think of, you know, what questions do I want to ask. That I would say that is probably one of the hardest parts of the podcast, thinking about the question aspect of it. I can focus on the editing side.
Right. And harder to do so when you're the only host, right? So some of those first episodes, it's like conversations have pauses and people fall silent when they're thinking about what to say next. But the listener kind of expects a podcast to flow in a certain way. I think one of the things that, so I started writing questions to begin with. I think I have gotten better at that. Just you're basically gauging the way you think the conversation will go, but at the same time, you're not going to like fit it into this particular cutout because conversations have branches, right? And then other things happen. But I think one of the best things we've done for ourselves is Chris mentioned this, but you know, like 95-98% of the Marine Corps, you do a very good job of connecting with people based on their prior service and where they've been. And I think one of the best, in the beginning, we bounce back and forth asking questions. And in some ways that can be disorienting because you don't really get to establish a rapport with a person, like just going back and forth, just you and them. So I think the half and half format has definitely helped us out.
I was going to mention that as well. The way we ask questions.
So we started doing that like Chris, you and I interviewed Matt for his like retirement episode, and I think you and I kind of went back and forth for that. But nowadays it's like, Matt, we'll take the first half, I'll take the second half. And it really depends. We play to our strengths. Like if it's someone heavy in USPSA, then I'll probably take the first half. But if it's someone who's, you know, deployed a lot, been around, three gun, that kind of stuff, usually I'll let Matt, you know, lead into it because he's really good at making those connections. So that's helped. That's helped a lot.
But, I guess a question for you guys, hearing and like talking through how the podcast has changed, like achieve its goal, which is, I mean, from the beginning was just getting information out to Marines. And I guess you've kind of broadened that to the greater shooting sports too, beyond the Marine Corps. Do you guys see any like, and if you don't want to talk about it either, that's fine. But like, do you see any like changes coming, like significant changes coming to the podcast or like any pivots or areas that you'd like to explore?
I think the reach has expanded. This year's the first time I've had, I was shooting a Western PA and a random shooter on my squad was like, love the podcast, dude. I'm like, I don't even know who you are. That's pretty cool. I think it's working in tandem with me being a match director now is that like, now I'm, you know, forming all these other kinds of relationships and I'm able to organically tell people about the podcast. Not like I am a competitive shooter and I got a podcast going on and that's the only thing I ever talk about. You know, we work with other people and other things and help other people get exposure. But yeah, I don't know. We are, I think Matt alluded to it. We are developing a bit of a network. I guess that's the natural next step. But Matt?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Like there are things that we kind of have in place. We'll see where those plans actually go. You know, you always make plans, but sometimes plans don't work out, but we'll see kind of where they land. Well, as Frank said, this has been a year where people that I don't even know just start coming up to me and be like, dude, your podcast is awesome. Like, and I'm kind of like, who are you? And you know, some people reach out like, hey, you know, for three man, three gun, you should squad on my squad. And at first I had intentions of being on another squad, but then I was like, you know what? I'm going to go on this other squad. Because, well, not only is the Marine Corps team going to be on that squad, but, you know, some other people I don't know that actually listen are going to be on the squad as well. And we can all just get to know each other. And so that's been really cool. And, you know, just even some of the tactical game matches, people are like, hey, you're Bullets and Bourbon, right? And it's like, yeah, man. And it's like that. It's cool, you know, and so the name is kind of getting out there.
Yeah, I think the name change does help. It just rolls off the tongue better than 3GIQ.
Yeah, which, I mean, that was just
I would always need to repeat myself. I'm like, what is it again? 3GIQ, like, especially with the ear pro and like bullet, like actual people shooting.
I don't ever think I was in love with that name. It's just like I wanted a three gun podcast and I didn't want anything with the Marine Corps name to it. But it's like, you know, acronyms is big. And then I was, you know, whenever we were started talking about the name change, I was like, what sounds good? What do I like? You know, I love bourbon. I love bullets. It goes with guns. Well, yeah. Bullets and bourbon sounds really good. And like we talked about it and then we were like, well, you know, what are people going to think in terms of
mixing projectiles and alcohol?
Yeah. And it's just like, screw it.
Well, we've never advocated shooting while intoxicated.
No.
But it's part of the community afterwards, right? You share an adult beverage with your friends after the match. And, you know, you talk about your performance, you talk about life. I will say, though, that shortly after we made the change, I think the third B that might have made it in there is barbells.
Yes.
But
that was like a week later. I was like, dude, I came up with another name. Bullets and barbells.
And then and I was like, what if we do all three? And Matt's just like, too many Bs, man. Too many Bs. We can't do that. it's definitely been fun. Looking forward to, you know, talking to new people. And then just wherever else we're going to end up achieving.
But now I tend to bring bourbon to matches with me. So whenever we're done at the match, like we can just sit back and have some bourbon.
Yeah, that's why it's in the title.
Yeah.
Definitely why it's in the title. Yeah. Anything else you guys wanted to cover?
I had a question for Chris, but I can't even think of what it is now.
We're going to have Chris back on when after, you know, he creates the SIG competitive match empire, and everyone's traveling from the continental Alaska, Hawaii, all the different nations to go to his matches.
We're going to like double the tourism of New Hampshire.
Yeah.
I'm sure people come here. I've never even thought of coming to New Hampshire before I got a job here.
Hey, Chris, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
When do you see yourself having the ability to travel for a major three-gun match? And, like, where would you want to go?
Just, like,
I'm asking because, like, let's try and plan a three-gun match. Like, and I want to hear now, like, what do you think? What match?
Probably fall of 24. Would be around when I'd have a little more freedom, or maybe even like winter of 24 if we did one in a warmer state. Just because it's pretty busy during the summer here, and then looking at what we have like in the plans for 2024, it's gonna be pretty busy. So yeah, maybe like one of those, like a Texas match.
I was about to say, how about the Vortex shoot off?
When is that?
I want to say it's October, November. I think it's October of 24.
Okay. Yeah, the later in the year or the earlier in the year, kind of the better, because things will be a little slower as we're under the blanket of snow up here.
Okay. Let's plan. Let's start pre-planning an October Texas match.
Okay. Yeah, I can work on that.
Frank, you're coming.
Sure. I'll be teaching at the academy at that point, so I don't really have an idea of what my schedule is going to look like.
Yeah, I know.
But, yeah, if I can make it, yes, I would love to come along with.
Thanksgiving break. Any matches then? I'm sure families won't get upset about that at all.
No. I mean, I'm shooting the week before Thanksgiving this year. It's IPSC Nationals. The team's actually going. I mean, we touched upon the pistol team's accomplishments, but I think another thing that they're doing great is that they are starting to go shoot internationally. Them and, you know, the Alex Goking and Sean Muller are going to the Shotgun World Shoot.
Really cool.
Yeah, like super awesome that all that's happening.
I'm happy for them and extremely jealous, which is great. That's doing great.
Dude, Thailand in November? Yes.
No thanks. No. Nope. I'm jealous of Corson and Garcia.
Oh, Greece. Going to Greece. Dope.
That's pretty sick. I am, you know, let's see who else is there. So they're doing Greece, they're doing Thailand, and then
there's Scotland,
and they're going up to Scotland for Armosk. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. Next year, IPSC World Rifle Shoot is in Finland. We'll see if the team gets anybody there. I want to actually try and make that one.
Nice. Yeah, I guess Thailand. I would rather go to Thailand than the next Pistol World Shoot is going to be in South Africa. I'm just like,
eh. It's a throwback. Didn't they have it there before?
They did, but yeah. I don't know. I can't get excited about that location.
No.
As much as the other ones that we've been mentioning, like that's, yeah, sorry. It's down there on the power rankings. Yeah. Chris, thanks again for, you know, coming on another episode. We'll definitely have to talk about some of the great stuff that you're doing up at SIG. Work on Scott Rader and see if he will come be interviewed by us. Huh? He's been pretty resilient up to this point, but I think we can eventually wear him down. But we appreciate your time, and we're really happy that you're doing great things up there. And to our listeners, let us know how we're doing. Thank you for supporting us and listening to us up until 100 episode and not being sick of our voices at this point. We are doing a giveaway. This episode will come out in the morning of Friday the 8th. And Matt will be selecting the winner of that handguard sometime the evening. So stay tuned for that. Please, if you are enjoying what we're doing, leave us a review on your listing platform of choice. And thanks again.
Bye.